Yeah, there is. There's always kind of going to be an element. And I suppose I probably would have been the same if I hadn't have actually experienced it. It's very difficult to explain to somebody who kind of doesn't go regularly or can't kind of relate to what you're trying to say. Because, as I said, I wouldn't be hugely religious, or I'd be more kind of spiritual than religious. But when, as I said, a lot of my friends would have asked me, oh, you know, we're heading off to, we're heading to Greece for a week, or we're heading to somewhere else, do you fancy coming? And like, a lot of times I would, but if it conflicts with Lourdes, I will always kind of choose Lourdes over any of the holidays. I know, like, back when I was in sixth year, that would have been my second year going, and the tradition of the sixth year holiday, myself and the lads were all heading away, and there was 14 of us heading away to, was INAP at the time, and they all went for 2 weeks, and I came back a week early. And none of the lads could kind of understand, like, oh, you know, what are you coming back going to Lourdes for? What's the big deal? But it's hard to explain. It's just the sense of kind of, it's just a sense you get when you're there, and the emotion of the place, and the friendship and bonds that you build with people. I kind of always, well, like, kind of equate, I know you hear people kind of who tell war stories, like older men who've been in the war, and they say, oh, you know, the bonds you develop with people in war is kind of unlike any other bonds. I always think that the bonds you develop with people in Lourdes, because of the work you do dealing with the sick and just spending from 6 in the morning till a lot of times 10, 11 at night, every day with these people, just the bonds you develop are so strong that I can't ever see myself in the future not wanting to go back.
It sounds like hard work, though. You're working from 6 to 10. I mean, it's anything but a holiday.
Yeah, that's kind of another thing as well. Now, but when work is kind of loosely kind of defined, it's work can be anything from, like I said, you're up most mornings, 6, earlier some mornings, and you're definitely working till, I say, minimum 10 o'clock anyway, at least. Like, it can be later, and there are kind of night shifts as well if you are on a night duty. But the work can be anything from, in the morning you go down, you kind of wake up your pilgrims that are in your assigned ward, you kind of pop your head in, make sure they're up. If the pilgrims are more dependent, it can involve anything from getting them out of bed, showering them, looking after, shaving them, getting them ready for the mornings, getting them dressed, bring them down for breakfast, then taking them to each and every kind of ceremony and taking them to the loo a couple of times a day, and whatever is kind of required. But there are other kind of pilgrims who are totally kind of dependent or independent, and they would completely look after themselves. So your work would just be kind of chatting to them, making sure they're okay, asking how their week is going. So it all depends on who you're assigned to and who you feel kind of comfortable working with. But regardless who you're looking after, it is still classed as work. But in a lot of cases, it's kind of a privilege, I think, to be looking after these people, because I know, or probably in 50 years time or whatever it is, I could be in that situation, and I'd hope there's going to be someone who would be willing to kind of take the time and look after me if I didn't have my family or my friends who are able to do it. Because a lot of the people that go over, when you get chatting to them, their stories are kind of very sad. They wouldn't have, if you'd say, oh, you know, well, who's going to meet you at the airport, or are you looking forward to going home? A lot of them are in tears because they go from a week of kind of constant kind of receiving this mass attention and people looking after their needs 24/7 to they go home, and a lot of them kind of may just go home to an empty house and have, like, maybe meals on wheels once a day or once a week, or have someone who pops in once. So it's very sad when you hear the kind of stories that come out of people there. But so it is work in one way, but in another way it's kind of a privilege to have the time to meet these people, hear their stories, and just kind of look after them for the week.
Yeah, and the stories that you hear, I mean, do people find resolution to their problems or their stories? I mean, people go to Lourdes for healing, really, don't they?
Yeah, a lot of people do. Now, I don't think anybody goes expecting, no one goes saying, oh, I'm going to Lourdes, I have MS, for example, I'm going to go to Lourdes and that's it, I'm going to be healed. I think a lot of people go just for the experience and just to kind of take whatever they can from it. I know there was one woman kind of this year who came over originally with our diocese. Now, she was given the place, I don't know how it would work, but she was given the place, and when she came over, well, I kind of got chatting to her first week, and I was saying, or first couple of days, asking her, oh, you know, you're going to be coming down to the masses, or you're going to be going to the ceremonies. And she kind of explained to me that she said, you know, when she was younger, her husband, she got married in her 20s, and a couple of years after she got married, her husband had died, and he had kind of a short illness, but during the illness, she was kind of said a lot of prayers and spoke to priests and went to a lot of masses, kind of praying for his recovery and hoping that things would work out, but unfortunately it didn't go her way, and her husband had kind of passed away. So ever since kind of then, she had kind of turned her back on the kind of church and her whole kind of faith as such. But somebody had still convinced her to come to Lourdes with us. But even in Lourdes, she was very reluctant to go to any of the ceremonies or speak to any of the priests, and just didn't kind of really want to. Got the impression she was kind of more forced to kind of be there. But during the weekend, I think it was the second or third last day, she actually asked for one of the lads who was looking after her if he would kind of mind bringing her down to the grotto. She kind of, again, said it kind of a bit reluctantly, saying, oh, you know, I might as well head down to the grotto, since I'm here, to see what all the kind of fuss is about. So he took her down, brought her in the grotto, and kind of left her there just for a while on her own, just so she could kind of make any intentions she had. So he went away and left her for about a half an hour or so. And then when he came back, she was kind of in tears and was very kind of thankful to this boy, saying that she'd kind of said a few prayers to Our Lady and felt very relieved. And she'd kind of got a kind of a cure in herself, that she'd kind of reconciled all the differences she had with herself and her faith and the issues she had with her husband. So she, for the last 2 days of the pilgrimage, she was very kind of involved, went to every mass, went to every ceremony, spoke to all the priests, and got really involved. So that was, for me this year, that was one of the kind of big highlights, that she kind of came over. And it wasn't a cure as in kind of a medical cure. She didn't have any huge ailments. It was just that kind of spiritually and emotionally she came over totally in bits, and then she was completely kind of cured as such.